Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Trained to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Train to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. We're 8 days out from the start of the NFL draft. And with that, Nick Caserio always gives you a pre-draft presser. So with no more ado, this is Nick Caserio talking to the Assemble Media ahead of the NFL draft.
Of course. So, afternoon. Appreciate everybody being here. So, excited about the opportunity next week. It's been a fun offseason. Say, City of Houston. Just congratulations to University of Houston and all their success. A lot of fun to follow them. Best of luck to the Rockets. I think Ime and Raphael have done a phenomenal job. They got a really good team, so it'll be fun to watch a little playoff basketball here over the next few weeks, hopefully into the summer potentially. But so overall, team's in a pretty good spot. Had a number of players here that have been in the offseason working. Even though the offseason program doesn't start until Monday, we've had great attendance. We've had a lot of players in the building, some players at some different stages. Some of the new players that we've acquired have been around as well. So certainly making progress in that area. The official kickoff will be Monday. So expect that to be very well attended. First couple of weeks will be just focus on a weight room. And then once we transition to kind of phase two and phase three or whatever that entails these days. So we'll see. The rules are always changing. But, great attitude, great spirit, a lot of energy in the building. Definitely good to see. As far as next week is concerned, good opportunity for us here. 4 picks in the top 90 or whatever it is right now. The staff has done a phenomenal job like they do every year. Can't say enough about the work and the effort and the attitude of that group. Lip, Blanco, Zeke Curtis, John Richard, Brad Matthews, Bailey, DJ Debick. I mean, there's a number of folks just that kind of manage a lot of different things. We rely on a lot of different people. Certainly not a one-man operation, not a one-man band. They've done an incredible job, put the organization in a really good spot. I think the big thing right now is just kind of aggregating a lot of information and just kind of distilling it down into a clear picture of what we think we have with each player. So say it's very fluid, nothing's set. There's no board, quote-unquote, that's set. There's no final list of players or like we're, taking X number of players or these are the 3 players we're focused on. Let's say, honestly, this time of year is a bunch of noise out there. That's a bunch of garbage. So, we're just going to go through our process and just kind of prepare and get ready to go for next week and take advantage of our opportunities to pick whenever those might be. Right now, we're scheduled to pick at 25. Pick at 25, great. If we don't, we don't. However that goes, and just try to be judicious and try to make good decisions on behalf of the organization. Which we feel like we've done a decent job of that over the last few years. So, D'Amico and I will continue to talk about different players, talk about the team. We essentially meet every day, go through different groups of players, get his thoughts, get the thoughts of the coaching staff. Like, it's a collective effort. So, you know, because in the end, it's not one person making a decision. It's an organizational decision. Just trying to identify the right people with the right traits and characteristics to come in this building and make a commitment to our football team. I mean, this program is about mental and physical toughness. It's about competitiveness. And it's about putting the team first. So the rest of it, I mean, it's not about talent. I mean, talent's a part of it, but it's really not about talent. So, I mean, it focuses on putting together the best team possible. Got a long way to go before we play our first game. So just get the players in the building. You know, the players that we acquire next week are going to be the furthest behind. So the only expectation is they just try to have a good day, work hard, and just try to give themselves an opportunity to compete with the rest of the team. And that's kind of how we approach it. So, but, you know, definitely excited about the opportunity here next week. And, you know, we'll be ready to go when we have a chance to pick. So go ahead and take some questions and kind of get rolling.
Nick, how comfortable are you guys right now at number 25? And where do you see this particular draft? Where do you see there's a drop-off in talent, maybe, per se?
Just in terms of what do you mean by being comfortable at 25?
Like, do you feel like there is uncertainty given that you're that far back, or do you all feel like you all have, like, a big group of guys that you all would feel good at number 25 if it came down to that?
Yeah, no, we're always prepared to pick. And if we pick at 25, we're going to get a good football player. So, I mean, that's what we're focused on. So, I mean, honestly, like, we feel good about this draft. I mean, there's players littered throughout the draft, so we're pretty well positioned. Right now we don't have a fourth-round pick. You know, we got the top – four in the top 89. Don't have a fourth, got a fifth, don't have a sixth, have two sevens. So we'll have an opportunity, we think, throughout the draft to add players that we think are going to create some competition on this football team. So, I mean, I'd say whoever we bring in, I mean, it's going to be hard to make this football team. So, I mean, just try to get the right players. But we feel good about the players. I mean, our board's probably smaller than some other boards, and that's okay. But, I mean, there'll be players to pick on Thursday. There's going to be players to pick on Friday. Honestly, there's going to be players for us to pick on Saturday that we actually feel good about. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to get a good player if we pick at 25. So, and if we don't pick at 25, then wherever we pick next or whenever we do pick, we think we're going to get a pretty good player.
When you look at what you did in free agency, do you feel like it puts you in a position where you don't have to, obviously no one wants to put the draft purely for need. You have to set up where you can be flexible as far as positions and BBP.
Yeah, well, we've never drafted for need around here. I mean, we're never going to. So we're going to pick the best player that we feel fits our program, regardless of the position. I'd say other than a quarterback, I mean, I'd say pretty much any position is on the table. So like it always is. So try to stay true to our board. That's the reason we grade the players. So we put the players on the board. We grade them accordingly. We value them accordingly relative to what we think the role is going to be. And then we take them off the board as we see fit. So, I mean, that's not going to change.
Two-part-ish question. You guys made a lot of moves. Not a lot, but there's some chunking at the receiver position. You guys brought in Christian Kirk, Justin Watson, Braxton Berrios. How do you guys overall feel about the receiver room that you guys have, and what do you think about some of the talent in the draft that the receiver position is producing?
Yeah, I mean, look, we think we have a good football team right now. The goal is to try to continue to add good football players. Say there's a number of players at that position that look like they're going to have an opportunity to help their team. So there's always a lot of factors involved in that system. What's their role? How are you going to use them? I mean, it's so hard to tell. We haven't even been on the field yet. So I think you just try to evaluate the player, see some of the things that you like on tape. What are some of the things you don't like? Can you improve those areas and maybe they're deficient? How do they fit relative to the rest of your group? What are we going to ask them to do relative to what they've been asked to do? So I think that's the one benefit of whether it's the visit here, interview at the combine, you sort of get more of an intimate understanding of exactly what they were asked to do from a technique, from an assignment standpoint. You would hope that they have an understanding of their assignment and their system, and then we try to teach them some things relative to our system. How much they retain, how much they understand, where are they behind, where's the gap that we have to make up. So I would say that position in particular in the draft, I mean, it certainly looks like there's some players that are going to be able to help teams, whomever drafts them.
Hey, Nick, I haven't talked to you since all the offseason. I want to talk to you a little bit about the offensive line. What was the thought process with the changes that you guys made? And there's a lot of people in the building. But if you could talk about the approach to the offensive line, and is that someplace you guys may look for
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's the same every year. Like, every year is different. We understand there's going to be turnover on the team. We know there's certain players whose contracts are going to expire. We're going to be able to keep some. There's other players that are under contract that they might be here, they might not be here. We didn't go into the off season and say, okay, here are the things that we're going to do. I think some of this is you always have to be adaptable, you have to be flexible, and just take the information in and then just make the decisions that you feel, you know, are best for the football team, which is what we did. So there's never a, well, this is what we're going to do, this is what we think is going to happen. Some of this responded to some of the information around you. And, you know, if we didn't make any changes, if we had to go into the season with the group that we had, then we would have done that. But wasn't the case. I'd say each case was a little bit different. Each situation was a little bit different. But yeah, I wouldn't say there was anything specific that we said, well, this is what we're going to do, this is what we need to do, and then even moving forward. I mean, we feel good about the players that are in the building. Are we going to add some players that potentially think can help our football team? That's always the goal. Understanding the draft is one opportunity. It's probably the biggest volume opportunity, which is why there's such a heightened, I would say, awareness and emphasis on it. I mean, we don't put any more emphasis on a draft than we do any other phase of the team building process. So draft's no different than free agency than it is in the training camp process in terms of building the practice squad. So we try to approach it the same way. So, you know, we lost some players or moved on from some players at a lot of different positions. We've added some players at other positions, including the offensive line. So, you know, once the players are here, once we have an opportunity to get on the field, we'll kind of see how it all fits together.
Nick, mine is kind of two-part as well. How much would you say y'all's draft process has changed over the years based off of the information you've learned over the years and also the, you know, whatever turnover has been in the building? And then also, how much does changing the offense change how you guys evaluate offensive players going into this draft?
Yeah, two great questions. I'd say the core of the process, and I'd say not just specific to the draft, but you try to put some things in place that you think are going to be consistent over time, regardless of who's in the building, regardless of the system. And then if you have to make some adjustments or tweaks on the margins or on the periphery to account for some of those changes, kind of that's how we approach it. I would say we've probably tweaked the in-house draft process a little bit, the approach to that. There's some things that we've carried over what we did in New England. There's some things that we've done a little bit differently. And really the whole point of all of the exercises is to arrive at an endpoint to create as accurate a picture of the player so that you can make the best decision on behalf of the organization at that time. So I would say everybody goes about it a little bit differently. How we do our visits on campus is different than other teams do it, but we feel like we get a lot of value out of that. And we always, at the end of it, go back and say, hey, what are some of the things that everybody thought were productive? What are some areas that we feel we can improve? There's always going to be a little bit of give and take. As far as systematically, are you doing things differently in the draft process because it has to fit, whether it's offensively or defensively? Probably have to be careful about that. So you have to start with the player, what they do well, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, what are their deficiencies, what can we improve? How does that player fit within our system, or what do we think that's going to look like? Understanding this year offensively, all right, look, football is football. Like, offense is offense. We're not all of a sudden going to put in an offense that, you know, wasn't around, you know, that's brand new that nobody's ever seen before. But maybe there's certain positions, hey, you know what, a little bit less of this, a little bit more of that. Okay, who are the players that maybe have some of those qualities? So that's where there's always a constant flow of information and communication back and forth, which in the end, it's helpful for everybody involved. So say whatever the offense is going to look like, and it's the same thing on defense, like what do the players do well? So then we're going to put them in positions. I would say, and you can talk to D'Amico about this, or he's probably talked about it, but we've changed over the last couple of years some of the things that we've done defensively, schematically. It's maybe some changes on the margins to accentuate the things that the players do well, and there'll probably be some things that we do this year that are a little bit different that we haven't done in previous years. So 3 years, same coach, same system, offense is going to be a little bit different. But by and large, that's not like some wholesale evaluation change relative to how we evaluate players to necessarily fit what we think we're going to look like offensively.
Going back to the offensive line and the process, you guys have had the most
invested, are among the top of the league, most invested in the offensive line, and it really kind of hasn't translated on the field. Given that, outside of getting rid of players and coaches, does that process maybe require a little bit more tweaking than other processes, given what the results have been based on the investment?
Yeah, we always look at everything. So, I mean, just try to, in the end, try to make the decisions that we feel, you know, are in the best interest of the team. It's always case by case. Each year is going to be a little bit different. So, contracts are contracts. I mean, it's just part of the process. So, we'll look at everything, and if there's something that we feel we can improve, we'll look at it. And if not, then, you know, we'll kind of keep moving forward. So, I don't think there's anything, you know, wholesale that we feel like we got to do, you know, that much differently.
Nick, I have a two-part question as well. How much does the pro day change for you all than it does from when you all are at the combine, when you're evaluating these players? And how important was it to lock up players like Derek Stingley Jr. and Jacob Petrie?
Yeah, I'd say the whole pro day kind of combine process, it's a little bit different. I'd say the combine, the big thing is you got 300 or so players there, and you know, the drills are the drills, right? Sometimes at a pro day, they might be able to do something a little bit different from a drill, or the coach can maybe have a little bit more involvement. You can actually ask them, hey, try this technique or see how they respond to this technique. You know, if you have a group of players and a defensive line, you might have like, you know, 10 defensive line coaches there. Now, they're not going to do 10 different drills, but maybe there's certain things that you're trying to look for to see how they handle, how they respond. Combine's a little bit more controlled. It's a little more fixed. I mean, everybody's kind of – but – look, the combine's a combine. I'd say the biggest thing with the combine is just kind of getting the data point. Okay, here's the information. Here's their height, their weight, their speed, their jump, just so you can put it into the system. And if they don't do it to the combine, then they got to do the pro day, then you can see it. And then, say, the pro day workout, everybody kind of uses them a little bit differently. I'd say, you know, from our perspective, it's more kind of some of it's geographic. Okay, you know, we had the opportunity to get down there to Austin. So, and you can kind of see grouping of players. You're not necessarily going just for one player, but – in Texas' case, I mean, they got, you know, 500 kids that are going to get drafted this year. So, I mean, it's good to see them all kind of in one spot. So, I'd say every situation is going to be a little bit different. But I'd say the pro day, you might be able to focus on something a little bit more specific relative to a drill. Maybe, well, this is what it looks like on tape. And then you actually see it live. And, okay, maybe it pops one way or the other. You know what? Okay, that's the benefit. It doesn't necessarily all of a sudden drastically change your evaluation. It's really another data point. So when you think about how many touch points we have, I mean, you're probably talking about dozens from beginning to end with the pro day, combine, workout, being a part of that. So your second part of your question relative to the players that we were able to extend. So, I mean, look, we didn't do anything. The players earned those opportunities with their play and their performance. You know, those are players that we think can help our football team moving forward. They certainly, you know, embody the qualities that we want Houston Texans to look like. So they're good football players, and I think our goal is to try to keep as many good football players around here for as long a period of time as we can. So, I mean, honestly, it's a credit to the players and the coaches for putting themselves in that position, you know, and they'll kind of handle the behind the scenes and the finances of the finances. But, you know, those players are, I mean, they've all been here. I mean, Petrie's been here. Stanley's been here. I mean, you can talk about going back last year with Nico. Nico's in here. I mean, so, I mean, that says a lot about their commitment to winning, their commitment to football, you know, prioritizing, you know, their job and its importance. And I think I got asked about this, you know, on, you know, on 610 about once you give a player a contract, like, how are they going to respond? Are you worried about how they might respond relative to their approach and their attitude? And I would just say, you know, not necessarily. Like, if you got the right people, then, I mean, in the end, it's about them taking care of their personal situation and putting them in a position where they can kind of take care of themselves and maybe future generations, which is, that's the goal. All of us want to be put in a position where we have an opportunity, you know, to potentially make an impact and help people, you know, and it's kind of a different way, but this is a great way for them to be able to do that. And in the end, we want to go out there and play good football, and that's what they're focused on.
What's different in the evaluation process of a prospect that maybe hasn't played a position that maybe you project him for, and guys that maybe could change positions from what they did in college to maybe what you would see them at the NFL? How is that different from some of the other evaluations?
It's tricky. It's tricky because when you see a player actually do something, you have a better barometer understanding. If you're projecting it, there's a little bit of trial and error, and you're not really sure how the player is going to respond, whether it's physically or mentally, be able to handle that type of role. So honestly, there's a little bit of risk involved. I mean, there's risk in any player. But I think when you see a player, whether it's play multiple positions, then it's a lot easier to say, you know what, we think he might be able to handle a multi-position role, whether it's offensively or defensively. It's, you know, on the offensive line, this guy's okay, they've just played tackle. Can they move inside? They just played guard. Can they put their hand on the ball and play center? And if they haven't done it, you got to sort of make an extrapolation based on the information that you have. Same thing on defense. Have a corner, never played inside the formation. Do we think he can play inside the formation? Well, yeah, here's the reason why. You know, safety, you've seen – one thing about college football, you've seen multi-position players. Safety's playing nickel. Corner's playing nickel. All right, well, that – maybe can enhance a player's overall value and then try to project that in your system. What are you going to ask the player to do? Ultimately, it comes back to, right? And can they handle it? And if they can handle it, great. If they can't, all right, just put them in a position where they can just handle one specific thing. I would say, you know, going back to, you know, some of my experience in New England, like, you know, Edelman, like, never played receiver, right? So you're taking an absolute flyer on a player's traits and his characteristics. I mean, he never caught a punt. He never caught a pass. Okay, well, we think the guy's good with the ball in his hands. You know, we're going to take a flyer on him and see how it goes. I mean, for 4 years, it didn't go very well. It was a little bit up and down. He was injured. But the one thing you saw, I mean, you saw in the first preseason game, we put him back there for punt return. He, you know, went 90 yards of punt return. It's kind of like, all right, well, I mean, guy's never returned a punt before, but, like, you know, guy gets a ball in his hands. So you don't really know until you know until you actually see it. So there's some risk involved, and you're going to project it. But you don't want to put the player in a position where you're not really given the best opportunity. So we could say on a piece of paper, oh, yeah, this guy could play multiple positions. Okay, well, can he? All right, well, we think he can. Here's the reason why. Or, you know, we're going to focus on one position, and then once he has an opportunity to kind of play that position, then maybe we can give him some more. And because you're trying to build your overall depth and overall value of your team. And say, you know, here internally, Titus is a real good example. And I wasn't here when Titus got drafted, but Titus, you know, I mean, he was a quarterback, but he really wasn't. And then he played tackle, right? So he was a tackle. And then nobody really knew if he could play inside until, like, he was actually put inside. And, you know, Titus is actually going in there and done a pretty good job when he's going to ask to play. So, again, it's what's a position? What do you ask him to do? Okay, you want to be fair to the player. But it's always case by case, and not everybody can do everything. Sometimes they're better off just focusing on one position and try to get really good at that position because that's their best opportunity to help the team. So.
Kind of just piggybacking on that. When it comes to scouting smaller school players, especially when it comes to offensive and defensive linemen, when the talent level is completely different than what you see at the Power 5 level, is it more challenging to project their ceiling and what they can be, especially when you only get a small sample size, say at like a Senior Bowl or like an NFLPA Bowl, where you get to see them up close in person?
I think the nature of the draft in the end, there's a projection element, regardless of how much a player has or has not played. When you're playing at a lower level, quote-unquote a lower level, there's obviously going to be an adjustment period that takes place. So is there an opportunity to evaluate that, like you said, in the Senior Bowl or East-West or something like that? I mean, I'd say those two games done a pretty good job of maybe bringing in some lower level, smaller school players. But it's a huge jump. There's no question about it. So how are they going to handle it? I'd say, you know, going back to, you know, Duggar, there's another example in New England, you know, basically small school kid. I mean, they were playing against like the 20 of us in this room, like basically nobody. And then, you know, went to the Senior Bowl, and I'm including myself in that equation. And then, you know, went to the Senior Bowl and did okay. So is there some evidence along the way? But so you have to, again, it's all right, here's the player. Here's what we think he does well. You might have to not downgrade it based on the level of competition, but there's a little bit of difference, you know, what the guy does against LSU versus what he does against, you know, Western Tennessee State or somebody like that, if that's who they're playing every week. So you're not going to eliminate a player, but, you know, give him an opportunity. But, you know, not every player can make that jump. So, I mean, it's case by case like a lot of this is, but there's a projection element that's involved, no question about it.
Nick, as you normally do when you open up these press conferences, you mentioned some of the guys that are in your group, Lip, Zeke, and Brad. You guys have been together the last couple of years doing this. Last three drafts, you drafted six offensive linemen, three in the first two rounds. Do you think internally there needs to be a reevaluation of how you evaluate that specific position?
I mean, we look at everything on a constant basis. So, again, it's case by case. I mean, a lot of faith and confidence. I mean, I'd say the entire building, you know, starting with D'Amico and the coaching staff, have a lot of confidence in that group. So, again, look at everything, and we'll try to make decisions that, you know, we think make sense for your organization. They're not all going to work. I mean, I've said this before. I mean, I don't know how many times I've said it, but it's a lot. You can ask Omar. I mean, a draft's 50-50. I mean, that's what it is. So some are going to work. Some aren't going to work. I mean, that's just the way it goes. So we're no different than any other team. So if there's something that we can improve and tweak and adjust, we'll look at it. So it's never one particular thing and never one factor, but we're always open-minded and always trying to find, you know, ways to make things better.
Nick, you spoke about, you know, how the changes on the offensive line, they were case-by-case basis, but given the fact that you all had so many changes, do you feel like you have to leave this draft by at least touching on the offensive line at all?
Yeah, like we feel we got to add good football players to our football team. I mean, that's where we're focused on. So whatever those positions entail, then that's how it's going to work. So, I mean, that's how we approach it. That's how we're going to handle it. So we'll see how it all goes next week.
Nick, when it comes to this running back class, a lot of people describe it as talented and deep. Is that your assessment just of the group? And is running back something that basically when you look at it, you look at how, you know, obviously some players' contracts, you always want to, you know, look ahead and see if there, maybe there's something that could bolster the position potentially?
Yeah, I mean, similar to the receiver question, I mean, it's a, there's a good group of backs. So, I mean, this goes back to the same thing. We'll stack the board. We'll look at what our options are, look at supply and demand. What are you passing up in lieu of something else? So that's pretty good room. We feel like we got, you know, pretty good cohort of players in that group. I mean, Mixon, I mean, I think he went to the Pro Bowl last year, so he's a good football player. I mean, DP was one of the top kickoff returners, and when he's played offensively, he's done a pretty good job with his opportunities. Say, Dare's got a, his role is kind of specific to the kicking game, so there's an opportunity for us to add a player that we think can help our team. We'll look at it. If we don't, then we'll go with whatever group. And again, like, everybody's focused on a draft, but there's other opportunities to add players to your team, which, I mean, we've done that. I would say let's go back to 2023. Like, four of the starters on the offensive line the first 4 weeks, like, weren't here until August. So, you know, that was, like, we were forced to do that because of injuries and some other things that took place. So, again, there's not one way to add players to the team. We're always going to look at multiple avenues and try to take advantage of the opportunities and make good decisions, you know, which we've, you know, hopefully shown the ability to do on a yearly basis.
Hey, Nick, kind of kind of like what Wes asked you, but about different positions. You guys have had really good success drafting middle rounds, getting guys like receivers, some defensive skill players. Is there something about your group or the way you guys approach the draft, and I realize the draft is, as you said, 50-50, that makes you kind of keen or able to spot guys that come lower in those positions that will make it in the league? Or are you just lucky?
Well, there's no magic formula. I would say we just try to stay committed and disciplined to our approach and just continue to have fluid conversations and try to know the players as intimately as possible, top to bottom. So, I mean, we spend as much time kind of on the middle to the, I would say, bottom to even the free agent group as we do at the top of the draft. So there's 250 whatever opportunities to add players to your team in a draft, right? And there's however many slots there are, right? There's going to be players that come from all over the place, right? You're going to have guys in the first round that end up being really good players. You're going to have guys in the first round that end up being not good players. You're going to have guys in the fifth round that end up being good players. You're going to have guys in the seventh round. Look, some of this is circumstance. Some of this is the situation that they're going into. But if you just try to know the player, understand their skill set, understand kind of what motivates them, understand what makes them tick, understand what works in this building, and just put them in the right spot from a value standpoint and just stay true to your board, I mean, that's what we try to do. And I'd say, going back to an earlier question, I would say we've had a lot of continuity, which among that group, which I would say is definitely a strength. So there's been some things that I've been able to kind of take off my plate because there's a lot of faith and confidence in other folks in that group. So to be able to do that when you work with someone on a regular basis, you know, it makes it, I'd say, the process a lot smoother and a lot easier, which goes back to trust and faith and confidence. So, you know, look, every decision we make is not going to be perfect. You know, I've made more mistakes than anybody. I'll be the first to admit it. But, you know, we try to just make more good decisions than bad decisions and just try to, you know, do the best we can. And in the end, try to make good decisions for the organization, which is the most important thing.
I know you and Nick Cayley, y'all have experience with guys with similar skill sets that play the same position, having success at the same time. Amendola and Edelman and then Puka and Kupp. You brought in Kirk, who works a lot in the slot. Is it safe to say that someone who primarily worked in the slot in college, like, you're not going to shy away from him just because he did a majority of his work in the slot, like Christian?
Yeah, good question, Landry. I would say, honestly, when you look at kind of formationing and some of the things that you're able to do from an alignment standpoint, I mean, guys essentially line up all over the place. So even if they're quote-unquote inside the formation players, I mean, everybody's an inside the formation player. When you reduce a split, you know, when you have tight receivers tight their formation, all right, you know, line up players outside the formation. I would say going back to Kirk, you know, at A&M, like, he played inside the formation. But I would say when you look at his career, I mean, he's pretty much played all over the formation. I mean, let's go back to Arizona. I mean, you know, this guy played all over the place. So you need players that maybe have some degree of flexibility. So if a guy can play inside the formation, outside the formation, all right, you know, not everybody can do that, but some can. You can do some things formationally to kind of help the players. There's some players that are better served on a perimeter. Try to keep him on a perimeter. If he's an inside-only player, okay, well, then he's an inside-only player. Like Amendola, I would say, was an inside-only player. I'd say Edelman wasn't an inside-only player. Like, Edelman was able to be a multi-purpose player, plenty of snaps of him on a perimeter. So it goes back to the same thing. What does a player do well? How do you deploy him? What can you do formationally to help him? What can you do to give him free access? What can you do to help him against the matchup one-on-one, whatever it is? So, I mean, we'll look at everything. But, again, you need three or four receivers that are going to be able to do multiple things. Unless they do something really, really well, you want to just put them over there and say, okay, like, leave him on his own, and then we can handle the rest of the formation with these other guys over here. So, I mean, Gronkowski was a quote-unquote tight end. But, I mean, there's plenty of times that he was singled on the perimeter formation. I mean, Rob's going to the Hall of Fame, so we're talking about one of the best tight ends ever. But, you know, so a lot of it is you can kind of manipulate the defense however you need to based on the personnel that you have.
What's up, Nick? One of that, a real quick one after that. Just generally speaking, your philosophy on, like, drafting a guy that maybe has a really high ceiling but a low floor, or do you try to steer towards higher floors? Like, just generally, how do you do that boom or bust?
Yeah, I mean, look, even if you think that, you're not really sure. Like, you might, oh, this guy has a high ceiling. Okay, well, what does that even mean? Or, hey, this guy's got a low floor. Like, all right, well, then it maybe goes the other way. So look at the player, understand the player, understand his makeup, look at his skills. Where's the bogey that, okay, they have some room in these areas? I mean, look, they all got to get stronger. So it's not, well, yeah, this guy's, you know, needs to put on strength. Well, they all do, right? I mean, to get in the off-season program, that's how you can get stronger. So I think you got to be careful. I mean, the best thing that you can do is play football. And if the more we can evaluate that player, play football. I mean, we haven't talked about this, but, you know, it's like, well, you got a few more players a little bit older, 24, 25 years old. I mean, honestly, it actually helps them because they have more experience. They've played more football. Okay, if they reach their quote-unquote ceiling, whatever that is, I mean, I don't know. There's still room for improvement. I mean, I've seen plenty of examples of players who were in the league 6, 7 years who still improved, you know, 7, 8, you know, years in. So there's always opportunity. So I think you have to be careful just about, well, you know, that notion, because it may not really come to fruition the way that you think it's going to.
And then just real quick, what kind of update can you give us on Tank? Do you expect them to see the field, you know, at any point?
Yeah, I mean, making progress. I mean, honestly, those guys are day-to-day. Try not to put any timetables on it because, I mean, none of us are doctors. So, I mean, I'm certainly not smart enough to be a doctor. So when they're ready. And, you know, once they give us the information, then, you know, we'll adjust accordingly. But he's had a good attitude. He's been in here. I mean, honestly, probably seen him every day. So he's in good spirits. He's working hard. So, you know, take it one day at a time. And, you know, when he's ready, he's ready.
We'll close with Sarge, Sam, and DJ.
You talked about earlier about the guys that are going to be coming in through the draft being the farthest behind. D'Amico's talked a little bit about this offseason about bringing guys in to be able to compete and kind of make the team better through competition. How do you kind of go about identifying guys in the draft that can kind of catch up quickly and be able to compete rather than kind of take a step back?
Yeah, really, we'll be able to tell that once they're actually here. So whenever rookie minicamp is, I mean, it's that second week in May or whatever it is. Like, once they actually get here, then we'll be able to get, all right, get some baseline measurements. Where are they? Are they behind? Like, say, a lot of guys, it's more so from a training perspective. You have guys that have this 6 to 8 week period where they've been traveling, been on planes, they haven't been able to establish their routine. All right, once they actually get started, I think the goal is get them ready for training camp. So do the best they can, give them as many resources, many opportunities, so when they go out there in training camp, they have an opportunity to compete with the rest of the group. So those are the steps and stages that, you know, we're going to take. So whenever they get here, all right, you'll have an idea. We'll be able to kind of assess them and then just get them in a position. Probably going to be some players, all right, maybe we're going to be limited in the spring, right? They're not really ready to train with our group. No problem, right? We're not afraid to say, hey, you know what? Like, give them time. We're never going to, like, rush someone and force someone. The goal is get them ready for training camp, all right, and give everybody the best opportunity in training camp to go out there and put themselves in a position to earn their role on a team, because they're going to earn it with their performance. So that's all we can do is just give them an opportunity and give them the best, put them in the best position to do that.
Nick, you said you've made some mistakes in the past. I'm not going to ask you about those mistakes. I'm just going to ask you.
Oh, you guys talk about them all the time. So.
I'm going to ask, what did you learn from those mistakes, and how can you use that going into this draft?
No, I think, you know, you just got to be open-minded. I mean, there's going to be things that happen. So, you know, honestly, just try to take it one day at a time and just try to have constant dialogue and constant communication with the people in the building. I mean, I've talked about this publicly. I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with D'Amico. I mean, love working with them, love having conversations, and we're just trying to, in the end, just put the organization in the best spot possible and help each other. So, again, I would say, like, I'm pretty curious and always trying to find ways to get better. You know, I'm not going to talk about them publicly, what some of those things are. So, I mean, honestly, just try to do the best I can every day for this organization, try to put in the best position possible, you know, and hopefully we can just keep making progress. I think we feel like the program's in a pretty good spot. There's a lot of work and a lot of time, a lot of effort that's gone into this. So, you know, the goal is every year is going to be different. Honestly, what's going to happen in 2025? I mean, none of us know. Like, I certainly don't have any answers. I mean, you know, a lot of people probably think they do, but none of us really know what's going to happen other than, like, let's just go out there, try to have a good day, try to stack days on top of each other, try to establish some level of consistent performance. And then in the end, it comes down to how well does the team execute on Sundays. So we're going to execute well enough, or we're not. So, I mean, that's what – I mean, I think they showed a stat at the league meetings. I mean, 70% of the games were one score in the fourth quarter in the league this year. So what does that tell you? It tells you the margins are so small. So what can you do to give yourself an opportunity to put yourself in a position? Because in the end, it's going to come down to probably a possession in a fourth quarter. Who's able to execute? The teams that execute – are the ones that are going to be able to win in advance, and the teams that don't are not. So that's kind of how we're, you know, approaching it. But, you know, there's something we can do with the process. There's something that we can do with something within the program. So we can do in one of the department areas that helps the team. Like, ultimately, that's my responsibility, and I have a fiduciary responsibility to do that for, you know, as many people here in the building. That's what we're going to try to do.
Obviously,
did I just blow up television?
obviously, when you guys were, you know, back in the day, were drafting a little bit higher, it's easy to kind of know how the board was going to fall. Now, obviously, you guys have been picking in the back of the first round, and obviously last year you had that first round pick. How do you guys kind of go about figuring out how the board's kind of going to fall? What's kind of that process? Just gathering intel across the league of how exactly you think which players are going to be available on that slot?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a crapshoot, but you look at, all right, certain cohort of players, more than likely these players probably are not going to be available, and they're probably going to be somewhere else. No problem. All right, what's that next tier? Where's the line of demarcation? I would just say you're still evaluating those players, even the ones at the top of the board. So, again, like, I've watched as much film on Travis Hunter as some other players, right? Even though, like, I mean, look, we're not drafting Travis Hunter. Like, this isn't like some newsflash here. But when you do Colorado, it's not like, well, don't worry about Travis Hunter because he's, you know, going to the top five. Well, you're still going to evaluate him because you never know, like, when that player is going to become available. I would say going back to my time in New England with Cooks. So I say Cooks, I mean, I know Cooks was here in Houston, but, you know, I mean, Brandon was a player, like, I went out and worked out, like, him and I in a bubble. And, you know, he got drafted wherever he got drafted, in New Orleans, right? And then we ended up trading for him in New England. So, like, that information is valuable. So you try to – you know, understanding, all right, this group of players probably in the end, probably not a non-factor, but just not a factor for us. All right, who's the next group? And then, look, there's 4,000 mock drafts that are out there. Honestly, I don't know which one's right, which one's wrong. I mean, somebody can probably analyze that. But, all right, there's a million mock drafts. I would just say some are probably more relevant than others because some are getting the information from the teams. Like, they're not just making it up themselves. Like, they're talking to teams saying, hey, you know, so that's how they're building it, right? So they're getting intel. I'd say agents are involved. Like, they're getting intel. All right, so you try to, I would say, you try to gather information, but you have to be careful about how much you actually put in the information. And then what can you trust and what can you rely on? And you're just trying to get yourself in the ballpark. Okay. All right. Looks like if we're around here, maybe these six or eight guys, we'd have an opportunity to pick. Okay. All right. Who are we interested? Who do we like? All right. This guy's not a factor. Hey, if we do this, we can move here. So it's a little bit of cat and mouse. And I'd say some of it you're not going to really know until draft day starts. And I'd say we've talked about this before. Trades are very player driven, you know, so you don't know if you're going to trade up for a player until you actually get to draft day. So, again, have to be careful about too much information, but utilize it and then be able to kind of trust, I'd say, reliable information from the sources that you think are reputable. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you all.
There you go. Nick Caserio giving us more than we had even bargained for in many different ways in his pre-NFL draft presser. We'll circle back around to that here at one as the Astros have gotten themselves going. Renald Blanco doing a little job, doing a little bit of work trying to find his curveball. We'll talk about all that a little bit later. But coming up next, let's get into our lunchtime confessions. We'll do that on Sports Radio 610.
All right, let's start with a little timely confession here about Nick Caserio. And, of course, we're going to revisit that here in just a few minutes. So kind of break down some of the things that he said. Here's my confession, though. I think Nick thought he was on Payne and Pendergast during that.
My man got comfortable.
He got real comfortable. 41 minutes of questions and answers. Very loose and comfortable, and
loose is one of those words for sure.
In fact, maybe a little bit too comfortable at one point. But here's the other part of confession. I think maybe we should give Payne and Pendergast some credit. They've loosened him up a little bit.
Yeah, he's definitely gotten more comfortable in these situations. And yeah, Payne and Pendergast, they create an environment when they have him on where, you know, they're joking and laughing. And I don't know that he was necessarily joking and laughing a whole bunch with the assembled media. But he definitely, like, felt comfortable, you know, getting his thoughts out, which I don't think he's ever necessarily been too hard up about. But I was surprised that he even gave us what he did because, I mean, these are the types of press conferences that many of the general managers around the league do headed into the NFL draft. And usually they are very milquetoast. And I know some people would be like, all right, well, you know, this was not that insightful. But he gave you a little bit.
Some meat. We'll get into it.
I think he left a few breadcrumbs here and there that maybe make you think, could that mean something? Which I think that's about all I could ask for from Nick Caserio in that circumstance. I realize, and I have to admit, I'm judgy. But I think I'm not judgy about the big things. Like, I actually try to be very accepting about, like, the big things. I've recognized, though, that I'm very judgy about little things.
Like what?
Like, little things I could be real judgy on. And what hipped me to this was earlier today, Figgy walks into the studio and goes, hey, do y'all like peeps? And I almost cussed at him. I really did. Because, like, I find those things not just to be not tasty for me. I find those things to be repulsive. Why? I don't really have a good reason.
I think that one's acceptable.
I'm just real judgy. That, talk about candy corn.
I like candy corn with dry roasted peanuts.
And I judge you.
It's awesome.
And I judge you for it.
It's awesome.
In a way,
but not
that,
by themselves.
In a way that does not make sense for people's individual choices. And I think it's because it's not something that actually matters. So if I'm judgmental about it, I don't think people actually care. But I realize that it's an outsized level of judgment.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because I asked Reggie that because it was some people from the other station walking in the hallway. They had a whole bunch of peeps, like boxes of peeps. And I'm like, what, y'all got some peeps? Like, and they turned around, yeah, you want some?
No,
yeah.
I'm no, like, no, I don't. No,
no, no. Oh, sports guys love to eat everything. I'm like, no, we don't. Like, nah, I seen that. They had a Dr. Pepper peeps.
Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, hey, she's your type. You don't got no standards. What you mean? Wait, hold on. Wait
I'm
a
like,
minute.
I'm like, nah, we actually the pickiest eaters.
Yes.
Are we the pickiest eaters?
I don't know if we are, but we often get profiled.
Yeah. I think we the cleanest station here, though. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I really learned that being that radio roll with y'all too, because I felt like we were pretty clean.
We did a decent job. And of course, I'm leaning heavily on the we, because shout out to the people who actually did a majority of the cleaning. y'all are real MVP.
Man, I'm kind of worried because I feel like I might get a talking to after that press conference.
Oh well,
yeah. So I was sitting here, and Nick Caserio. The longer you talk and listen to him talk, you kind of. Doze off.
He lulls you into kind of like a
false sense of comfort.
Yeah. So I got a little too comfortable. I was sitting here, and then all of a sudden, this question was asked by Sarge.
Nick, you said you've made some mistakes in the past. I'm not going to ask you about those mistakes. I'm just going to ask you.
Oh, you guys talk about them all the time.
Woo! I'm like, wait a minute.
was that what I thought it was?
I was sitting here, and I could hear it in the background, and then I heard that part. I'm like, did he just say that? So I had to sit there and think. I was looking at y'all. I think y'all was doing something else.
I was watching the baseball game.
I would have known for sure if I seen y'all reaction, kind of like, whoa. I didn't see that. So I'm like, you know what? Let me hit this dump button just in case.
When in doubt.
Yeah. So I'm like, man, I don't know who to blame on this one. I don't know if I should blame Sarge for the question. Should I blame Nick Caserio just being loose?
Well, I don't think you blame anybody. It's like he was comfortable, and that's what we wanted. Yeah. Comfortable enough to just talk like
one of
the guys. Well, we might not blame anyone. As the man whose finger's on the button, you can blame who you need
to,
brother.
It's not comfortable for me.
Yeah.
I'm chilling. I'm not expected to hear a cuss word.
And you know what the worst part about that is? Like, there's some people, and I can say this as I've sat in your role before, Figgy. There's some people that you go, oh, I can leave this. They're going to be good. They know what time it is, right? You get John Harris on the phone. Like, all right, John is a professional. He knows what's happening. Yeah. The first time you break that seal, you're like, I can never trust you again.
I was just telling our engineer, I'm like, man, I can never go to the bathroom now during a Nick Caserio press conference.
Apparently, Nick ruined it. Nick got a mouth of a sailor now. We didn't even know it.
Yep, it's over now, man. I can't even bring you around my kids if I had some kids now. It's over, man. It's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
I will say, though, I was paying attention, and as a pseudo mini confession here, I guess hit the thing. I'm built different. I'm also judging you on this, Lopez. So we have Nick Caserio going. We're actively taking notes, and we'll talk about that again. Nick Caserio's pre-NFL draft press conference here in a little bit. We're taking notes. We're listening. But also, the Astros game has started. For those of you wondering, 1-0 Astros. Yes, I did that intentionally. Deal with it. Yes, still 1-0 Astros.
Yeah, Hold that thought.
Yes, 1-0 Astros. And we're watching that, and Lopez, your words exactly were what?
Regarding?
This is overstimulating?
I didn't put it quite like that, but basically said that.
Yeah. Some of us are used
sensory overload.
Sensory overload. Some of us are built different. Some of us are used to listening to things and watching multiple things at the same time. So this is your reason to add two more TVs.
Yeah, I had too many things going on.
Not if you watch three TVs consistently. All right, those are our lunchtime confessions brought to you by the Men's Clinic. Appreciation to them. For giving us that segment. But coming up next, we'll circle back around to it. Nick Caserio, in talking about the NFL draft headed into it, he got a little frustrated a few times. We'll talk about that and some of the insights, including his diction, his word choice, and a few instances that we thought were interesting. We'll do that next.